This is What's It Like with Dr. Ken Tangen.
Hi, this is Ken Tangen. This is episode 64 of What's It Like. My guest is Paul Kenish, better known as PK. Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Somewhere in Seattle?
Yes, in the north end of Seattle.
Did you grow up in Seattle?
I did. I grew up actually close to the neighborhood I live in now, which is called Shoreline.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I grew up close to White Center, so the south side of Seattle.
Oh, okay.
Did you come from a large family?
No, pretty small, but everybody lived close, so I was very close to my cousins and my aunts and uncles. Everybody lived in Seattle or very close to it.
Mm-hmm.
I just have one brother.
So growing up, who had the biggest influence on you?
Oh, that's a good question. In general, probably my mom and my grandmother on my dad's side. I spent a lot of time at my grandmother's house, say, after school and that kind of thing, and on the weekends. Not necessarily being babysat, but kind of just going over to grandma's house, you know. Her house was the house where everybody hung out, I guess is how it was.
That sounds like fun. What was your major challenge as a child?
My major challenge as a child? Oh, probably that I was incredibly shy. Yeah, I didn't like to speak up, and I really didn't like to say anything that made me look wrong. It made me awfully embarrassed, and so I kept to myself in the beginning, you know.
Was there a childhood experience, do you think, that contributed most to who you are today?
I don't know if I can think of anything in particular. I gravitated towards music pretty early, and I think I just locked in on that when I was, by the time I was 10 years old, that was kind of what I was identifying myself with, was I wasn't a musician yet, but that's what I wanted to be.
Any particular area of music?
Oh, when I was a kid, yeah, it was just all the classic stuff that was on the radio in the 70s and the stuff that my dad had, Stevie Wonder, Joni Mitchell, and there was still a lot of Beatles being played and, you know, all the stuff that was on the radio. But then somewhere I really got into the sound of upright bass, and I don't know if it was from jazz, it might have been from listening to any kind of music that has an upright bass in it, and that became the sound that I eventually really went for.
So you became a string player?
I became a string player, yeah. I started out on electric bass. I actually started out on drums and moved to electric bass when I was about 13 or 14, and then moved on to upright bass and continued to play electric in my early 20s.
Now, is the fingering for an electric bass the same as for an upright?
It's the same, but it's just so much bigger that you have to use a little bit of a different technique.
Mm-hmm.
You can't quite spread your hand as far and grab the same amount of notes.
I remember picking up a double bass and began teaching myself how to play it, and it was really hard on the fingers. The strings are really hard to push compared to a guitar or something.
Yeah, it takes a little bit of muscle. It's funny, when you look at pictures, oftentimes the bass player is the biggest guy in the back, you know? Because he has to be a big, strong dude.
Yeah.
It's not so much like that anymore, but that's how it used to be. But I've seen, in my days, man, I've seen little girls play bass, and there's that girl right now, Esperanza Spalding, that looks tiny, and she's just tearing up the upright bass. And she just won a Grammy this year or something. She's kind of come out of nowhere.
So how did you become a musician?
Started out definitely in school. Well, my dad played guitar and played bass and sang, but only like on the weekends and with his friends and stuff. And so I was kind of influenced by that. So I joined band in school, and I started out playing drums and then moved to orchestra and started playing all the other percussion instruments. And that got me interested in pitches and playing tones. I wasn't really interested in playing a horn. And we didn't have a jazz program. And I didn't know enough about that yet. So I ended up playing rock and roll bass. Like a friend of mine, literally, I was in a band where I was playing drums, and they found a better drummer, and they said, here, play this, you know? And it was just like that. It was put your finger there, and then put your finger there, and then put your finger there. And so I learned by the dots. But what I really wanted to do was be a musician. I wanted to hang out with musicians. I wanted to live the musician lifestyle. But it was my idea of it when I was 12 or 13 is what drew me towards it. And eventually it became more about being curious about the instrument. About the time I was 19 or 20, I got pretty serious about wanting to learn how to play bass.
I interviewed Mike Vaccaro, who is one of the world's best woodwind players.
Yeah.
And he says one of the keys to being a professional musician is liking to be alone and practicing a lot.
Yeah, I would say so. I just got a small cottage to myself, and that's all I've been doing lately. I consider it the woodshed, and I've been in here all day long playing, and I'm going to have to get out there and play some gigs pretty soon, but for the moment, I'm really satisfied to do the exploring and have my own little space to do it in.
So what does a professional musician actually do?
That's a good question. A lot of my friends give lessons. They teach. Some of my friends have a lot of people have another source of income. Being a working musician in a city like Seattle, or even New York, or even the bigger cities, San Francisco, most of the gigs that you pay, if you're a working musician and you play every night, you're going to be playing in bars, you're going to be playing weddings, you're going to be playing for any kind of situation that you can play for. It's not going to pay enough, so you're going to have to do something else. And or you're going to have some a spouse or a support system that allows you to do this. Some people write grants, and that's how they help. They have these projects that help fund their career. Oftentimes, I just find myself doing, part of the time I do what I have to try and make some money, and I really don't mind because I like music. It just, sometimes it's more of the situation. Maybe you don't want to play in a bar, but some days you don't want to go to work anyway, so it doesn't really matter. It's just how it is. and the variety is actually what ends up being great, is because I've found myself in situations where I do the same thing over and over again, and it gets old really quick, even though it's music and it's what I've struggled to do full time. I personally practice all day and then try to go play a gig at night. That doesn't make enough money for me to support a family, but it allows me to, I'm a single man and I need much. I don't have a whole lot of overhead. So somebody like me could probably scrape by.
Mm-hmm.
I used to tour a lot, and that keeps you busy because you're on the road and you're being paid continually, but you never come home with any money. So it's always, you're always just going. But that's fun. You know, I wish I could go back on the road. I just haven't been able to get either a project together or find the project that's already ready to go. You know, last time I got a call from somebody who was looking for an electric bass player. And so I ended up playing some rock and roll blues with an up-and-coming guitar player, a kid named Davey Knowles, who's still, you know, he's very young. He's 24, 25 now. And that was a great opportunity for a couple of years to basically tour and see the world. He took me to Europe a few times, and we went to Australia, and we toured the United States several times. And then just went our separate ways after a while.
So what's the best thing about your job?
My favorite and the best thing is that I get to do what I want to do, even on the days when I don't want to do it. it's a discipline that I enjoy facing. I decided a long time ago that it was me and the instrument, and it's really not, doesn't have much to do with the gigs or the money or the status or the career. And, on the days when I'm practicing and I feel I'm not thinking about the gigs or the money or the people or the status, then that's the best part of what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Let me turn it around. What's the worst part of your job?
Probably having to put up with the people that have to be there and the people you have to deal with that become red tape. I don't dislike bar owners, and I don't dislike junk people at clubs, and I don't dislike, you know, doormen and stuff like that, but it you have to wade your way through a whole bunch of people who tend to want to give you advice and offer their 2 cents about, you know, what you should be doing, or they want to say, how are we going to get more people in here, you know, this gig isn't taking off, or you have to really kind of squeeze a little more money out of them because they're not paying you enough for you to be able to pay your band. And those are situations that aren't likable, but are just part of it. And I tolerate as much as I can.
Is there anything that has surprised you about your job?
I had what surprised me is where I'm at now. When I started out, I figured I had a plan until I was about, when I was 20, I kind of knew where I'd be at 35. Well, I had a vision, and that was I wanted to, you know, get in a rock band, get on a tour bus, tour around the world, stay up late, playing clubs, meet girls, all those kinds of things. And I wanted to be accepted by my peers. I wanted people to say, yeah, he's a good player. I wanted the other musicians to respect me. And I got all that by the time I was 32 or 33. And then what surprised me was that, A, I wasn't satisfied with it, and B, I didn't know where to go from there. And I lost a couple of years to not really knowing what the next step was. I didn't have a plan. I didn't know where to go once I hit the ceiling in Seattle, so to speak, is what it felt like. And it's taken me a few years to kind of come around the idea that I am an artist at mid-career. I'm starting to redefine what I'm doing. What I've been doing isn't current anymore. There's a great past that I don't need to keep continuing. And there's something new that I'm working on, but it's still kind of undefined, and I'm trying to create space for that. And that's, so every day is kind of a surprise now. I found myself in a group of musicians that are far beyond my talent level, and or so I thought. I seem to be surrounded by people that went to college and learned music in an academic way, and I completely learned by asking questions, and I never went to school, and I've taken a few lessons, which have been really good, but I'm surprised and flattered to be playing with the people that I'm playing with. I didn't expect to be playing at this level. That's not to say that I have a big ego about my playing. I continually pinch myself and think, why am I here? Do these guys really want me to play? You know?
What type of person would be good at your job?
I think you need to be patient, and you have to have a liking. As a bass player, you tend to be a support person a lot. Your role is to hold it down.
Not a lot of solos?
Not a lot. And, you know, and if there are, they're short, and sometimes people talk over them, so you just have to enjoy that part of it, too. But what I've found is that a really good bass player that's really connecting with the band is really, in effect, driving the band. He and the drummer, or she and the drummer, are what everybody else leans on. And whether people in the audience know it or not, they're listening too, and it's moving them. And I spent a great deal of time playing funk too, and playing like disco funk to basically make people dance. Mm-hmm. And I learned that there too, that I could zero in on a groove and drive it home and just build it and build it and build it. And so that was something that I didn't get to do in jazz, where you're constantly kind of, in jazz, you're almost always moving around and being fluid. And funk was a very driving kind of piston-like motion, which was great for my jazz playing and vice versa. it taught me two different roles of the same instrument that are still kind of the same. You have to have big ears, and you have to be willing to be real flexible. And if you're the kind of player that that can put up with a lot of different styles, you're going to end up working with a lot of singers and a lot of people like that are demanding in kind of an interesting way. And that's another challenge to the job too. You might not be able to satisfy everybody.
For those not familiar with the term, what does big ears mean?
Oh, big ears means you can hear. You don't necessarily need to have everything written out for you or spelled out for you. It means that a person can pick up on the song really quick, and they know what you're doing, recognizing things fast. And that just comes with playing a lot.
Well, and some talent.
And yeah, if you play a lot, hopefully the talent develops itself, yeah.
So how would someone who wanted to, how would they get a job like yours?
I don't think going to school is a bad thing for this, actually. And I don't ever mean to say that schooling is not important, because I did go to a year of community college, and that's where I made some contacts. And the important thing is contacts. So if you think that you want to play music, or maybe you already are playing and you want to get out there and do it, somehow you have to throw yourself in the situation. Either start hanging out at the club and meeting musicians, or enroll in school and study music, and then you'll come up with a class of musicians who will then go on and develop their own little scene, and you'll work in that. You have to be pretty serious about it, I think, and you have to, at first, somehow get a project off the ground and make it recognizable so that other people hear of you, and then your name gets out there a little bit. It's networking is really, who you know is really the whole thing in the music business.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because it's if you're there right then. Like, if I don't go out and nobody sees me, I don't get any phone calls. But sometimes if I just go out and I'm standing there at the bar, somebody will look at me and go, "Hey, what are you doing Wednesday?" Because I'm standing there, and they look at me and they're like, "Oh, that's a bass player," you know. So there's part of it you have to go out and hang out and be a part of the scene. And the hard thing about that for me is sometimes I don't want to be there. You know, that's not really where I would be finding myself hanging out on a normal night. I would be at home practicing, or I'd be playing. I wouldn't really be at the bar, you know, hanging out. But I do it every now and then to support my friends and to get myself out, you know.
If there is such a thing, what's a typical day like for you?
I get up around 7:30 or 8:00, and after I've had something to eat, I start practicing. I'll typically practice for about 4 or 5 hours, and in there I'll have some snacks, you know, and eat a little bit.
Do you practice scales or songs or?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I practice scales first. I practice really slow, long tones at first, really about as slow as I can play, just to gain bow control. That's something I'm working on right now, and it seems like a good thing to start with. And then from there, after about an hour and a half of that, I go to scales, and I'll play an hour of scales, and it's all with the bow. And then I will play about an hour of arpeggios, broken up scales, chord tones is what they are. So I run all those, and so that's about 3.5-4 hours. And then I take a break and go for a walk or make a meal and sit down and check my email and phone messages and all that. And then I'm back on the bass again, and then it's all reading music. And then I read. I'm reading out of two different technique books right now. One is a famous German technique book called the Simondel, and the other one is a French book by a bass player named Francois Rabal. And it's two different techniques that just have a whole bunch of exercises, and I spend a few hours doing that. And then if I have any energy, I go to a Bikram yoga class. That's how I keep in shape. And then that's it. If I don't have a gig, I'll come home and I will, I'll rest. I'll read, or I might play my electric bass a little bit. But typically I'll put in a good 6 or 7 hour day, and then I'll go out for the night or I'll do something.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes and goes. If I'm playing a lot of gigs, if I've played a gig the night before, I won't get up early. I'll get up in the afternoon, closer to noon, and I'll just practice a shortened version of everything else. You know, everything. It depends on how much time I've got.
So, PK, everybody has to give themselves motivation occasionally. How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
Good question. I write down what I want to get done the night before. Sometimes I write out a practice schedule for a week. And I've learned not to make it too ambitious. So if I get stuck and I just don't feel like practicing, that's when I go for a walk, or that's when I turn on the radio and I get my mind away from it. And then when it gets really bad, when I just don't feel like playing, I go out and play with other people. If I can't practice by myself, going out and playing with a friend will take me out of that bad mood that I've, or that demotivated state, and restart, refresh me.
Let me turn the question around. When you have to soothe yourself, how do you calm yourself down?
That's hard. That's really hard. You know, if I get home from a gig and it's been a really good gig and I'm having trouble falling asleep, I'll definitely have a few drinks. to calm down. I'll have a few glasses of wine or something. Again, if I've gotten myself all frenzied up in rehearsal or practice and I drink a bunch of coffee or something, then I'll have to go for a walk and blow off the steam. Yoga has brought a lot of discipline, a lot of breath control that I can use to calm down and center. I use meditation exercises. One of the things that I use is a compassion exercise where I try to imagine, I try and sit and imagine that, try to understand and feel all the suffering and the hurt that everybody is going through in this world, and that everything that's happening that's painful, and accept it and know that it's there. And it almost feels like I take the lid off my heart, is what it feels like. And then it's a physical release. My body, I don't feel like my ego is driving everything at that point. And then that tense, wound up feeling tends to kind of go away. And that doesn't work. Then it comes back, and I have to keep doing that exercise. But it helps a lot to calm down.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
No, not to the core. I've had a couple of really painful breakups in my life, relationships that have fallen apart. I've had a couple of physical challenges that really didn't turn out to be, seemed painful at the time. I think the thing that's going to be hard for me to face is my parents passing. And that may be in the next 10 years, depending on how healthy they really are. But that's about the time I would kind of expect. And that may be the hardest thing, because I haven't really faced up to that idea yet. Not in a real way. I haven't been challenged like that.
Is there an idea or a principle that helps you through these challenges?
Well, I just believe in myself immensely. I know that I could be wrong, but I trust my gut, and I always have since I was 11 or 12, or even younger than that. But I distinctly remember a general idea of knowing I could trust myself and my instincts when I was 11 or 12. Not to say that I haven't made some great mistakes, but still, I keep coming back to, if my gut says yes, then it's yes.
If you're giving a commencement address for high school or college, what would you say?
I was going to say something like that. I was going to say that probably the most important thing is to believe in yourself, but also to trust your friends. And if everybody's telling you the same message, you might want to listen to it. On the other hand, you might have a pretty bold vision, and other people might not even know what you're talking about. And I think that finding some discipline in some way in your life and taking care of yourself is important. I've reached an age, I'm 40, almost 42, and this is the point where a few years ago I realized, I have to really start taking care of myself, otherwise I'm going to gain weight. And then my teeth have started to age, and some of my fillings are falling out, and my teeth are breaking. And so there's these things that I didn't think about when I was 20, or I didn't believe were really going to happen. And also, the fact that you may get what you want, like with my whole idea of wanting to be a rock star, I got to a point where I was on a tour bus, and I was playing big stages, and I was doing what I thought I wanted to do when I was 20. And it wasn't at all really what I wanted to do. It ended up being a big, blown-out, overblown version it had nothing to do with the music. It was just such a big spectacle that was not satisfying. And I had no idea when I was a kid, because I was blinded by the facade. But you don't know that until you do it. And if you're going to be a musician, I would say just hang in there, because whether you have a day job or not, you're still a musician. And no matter what you're doing, if you want to be any kind of artist or pursue a hobby or a passion, just go ahead and do it. And if you have a job, it doesn't mean you're any less of that. I know plenty of people that are successful at their art or their passion. And most important, they just have a good life. They're a good person. And I think that probably is what fuels the success.
I want to thank Paul Kennis for joining me today. Thanks, PK. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Kim.
If you'd like to leave a comment, ask a question, or get more info, go to whatsitlike.info.